At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Back into it on a Thursday morning here on Birds 365. Rooks Cabina from The Athletic is here. He is in sponge mode, just like Jalen Hurts.
You're repping the brand. Well done.
I had to do it.
You wrote about the sponge mode, Kellen Moore. I was just talking about Tom Moore. You take a look at Jalen Hurts getting ready for another round of OTAs and offseason and another new offense. Do we think that Jalen Hurts being in sponge mode and learning more will elevate him to another level? Or have we seen the best of Jalen Hurts already?
It's an interesting question because we haven't yet seen Jalen Hurts in a system where he could build from. I mean, this will be the fifth offensive play caller that he's had at the NFL level. He had four in college. This is just his state of being, which is, you know, interesting enough for a quarterback that he's had such sustainable success over that time period with different play callers. I mean, Sirianni handing it off to Shane Steichen, I guess, was within kind of the similar system at the start of it. But I think the main question about this really is, how are Kellen Moore and Doug Nussmeier going to use Jalen Hurts' strengths within whatever offense that they're building? I mean, if you look the last couple of years, what Moore's done with Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott before, there's a lot of success there. There's a lot in terms of, I think, more of a, from conversations I've had with others, it's kind of like more classic quarterback progressions and things like that. Obviously they need to work with handling the blitz. That was a big problem last year, but sponge mode is what I took of interest from that is that sometimes you'll see quarterbacks who have new offensive coordinators, head coaches come in and they want to be a part of the process. They want to jump into the room and they want to have their voice heard and they want to insert, hey, this is what I'd like to do. I'd like to put this in. And they kind of sometimes make demands. It didn't seem like Jalen Hurts was in that way. I mean, by saying sponge mode, he says he's very removed. This is what he says. And on the outside, just kind of letting them do their thing, present it to him, and then that's how he fits. And my impression after covering a part of a season with Jalen Hurts, it seems that he is more on the receptive end. Tell me what to do. Let's work with this and let's see what happens. And it's interesting what y'all pointed out in the segment before. You think about most of the elite quarterbacks, how much continuity is there? I mean, Patrick Mahomes, you mentioned Andy Reid. That's great. Whenever you can get a head coach like him or Kyle Shanahan and they stick around, Mike McDaniel maybe with the Dolphins and Tua, how you get to have that continuity at the head coach level. You're going to have a lot of turnover sometimes. Lamar Jackson, he had Greg Roman for several years, but they switched to Todd Monken. And he was a lot more I think I compare – what Monken did with Lamar Jackson was a lot like what I think Brian Johnson was trying to do with Jalen Hurts last year in terms of giving him a lot more options, running through a checklist before the snap. It's going to be that's one of the major things. And Jalen talked a little bit about that yesterday was how much of that pre-snap check is his responsibility. Will it be Cam Jurgens' responsibility? Where are they building that? That's going to be one of the major things Moore's doing. So, to have seen him have this sustainable success throughout his career through many play callers, I think it's fair to say that this is, you just want to see whether that potential can continue with the guy. And I think there's a lot of confidence that there can be. I think he's proven that through both college and the NFL. And that's actually a pretty good asset to have if like y'all said earlier, you're kind of bound to have turnover if you have a head coach like Nick Sirianni, who's more in a managerial role, and if you're too good and Shane Steichen leaves, you got to replace. And then if they're bad, and like last year, then you got to move on. So maybe kind of a perfect situation whenever you have a managerial coach and a quarterback who's more of a sponge mode type guy.
Yeah, if you want continuity, Brooks, it's almost you have to have an offensive play caller as the head coach. Because look where we are with the Eagles. I mean, the expectations are so high. Let's be honest. It ends one of two ways here. And that's either the head coach gets fired because of the lack of expectations. Then there's going to be turnover from that perspective. Who knows? Who could be Kellen Moore? Doubtful. Because if you're a failure, it's doubtful you're going to elevate the offensive coordinator. I suppose that's not impossible, but it's doubtful. And if the Eagles are tremendously successful, Kellen Moore is probably going to be a head coach if he turns Jalen Hurts back into what he was in 22 as a runner-up for MVP and Nick Sirianni stays here. So that's just the nature of the modern NFL, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think is interesting about the way they're set up on the offensive end right now is that whenever Shane Steichen was whenever he moved on to the Colts, there was kind of a pecking order somewhere where they could promote from within. And Brian Johnson moved up from there. If Kellen Moore, let's say, after a year or two, gets a head coaching job, who's would they promote from within? Who would that be? I mean, is that someone where Petullo gets his chance as an offensive coordinator? I mean, Doug Nussmeier has followed Moore a lot. I mean, is he someone that would be an offensive coordinator type? I think it was more clear when you had like an up and comer like Brian Johnson in your who had been a play caller in college and he could move through the ranks. Or is this a situation where Sirianni has learned that, hey, you know, it's good to have a full coaching staff and he's loyalty is obviously very important to him. But is it a situation where when you have a vacancy, sometimes it might be more important to have outside ideas continually coming through the program. So I think whenever you have head coaches, even who are play callers like Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan, maybe there's a value as time goes on to have, as Nick Sirianni learned last year, fresh ideas every year to maybe have an idea overall of what you want to do as an offense. But in the ever-changing, it might be nice to have someone come in and give their a different perspective based on what they've learned around the NFL. So the managerial role as a head coach is so interesting to me because it's so unpredictable. In the next couple
of years. That, real quick, as a follow-up to that, because I think it's interesting, wasn't going to go down this route, but I think it's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Whether you think Nick's wings were clipped or he learned versus – being a political animal and understood from the prospect of reading the room correctly and saying Jeffrey Lurie wanted some changes and wanted some fresh ideas. I know you can't know, but your perception of, was it true evolution or political, I'm going to save my skin?
Well, John, it's interesting. I think I've been thinking about this a lot as someone who is still learning about this franchise. I mean, I've been here 6-7 months, so I can't say that I know the full top to bottom thinking of an entire new organization. But from, you know, meeting with Jeffrey Lurie and hearing him at the annual meetings and just getting a sense of where things are, I think what they value as an organization, and hearing Howie Roseman talk about this the other day, they've sustained over the last 24 years, a team that hasn't had the bottom fall out. And how do you do that? I mean, they really value how Howie Roseman builds the roster up. But they keep talking about culture, how they value. And you think about, this is kind of the era of Eagles lifers, Fletcher Cox and Jason Kelsey. And, you know, Lane Johnson's probably going to play his whole career here too. Brandon Graham, other players like that. And how they continually build an environment where these players come in and they can extend them and continue to play. I say all that because I think what they value, what Jeffrey Lurie values in Nick Sirianni, is that with what they build out of that with the roster, his presence as a leader, as someone who builds out the year, how it works, how the team functions. I think they see a lot of the leadership qualities in Sirianni. Jeffrey Lurie sees that in him, and he values that a lot more than play calling. He said that himself. He said play calling is never a reason he hired a head coach. And
by the way, it's so overrated. I agree with you.
I think so too. But it is interesting because you know, it's volatile. So you have to you know, it sure as hell helps if the guy can make play calls. I mean, Andy Reid ended up being a great play caller.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't there a time too when Doug was the play caller and people were saying he had too much on his plate because he was calling the plays, and then, you know, you're not
it's
paying
not
attention.
Working. Everybody's going to criticize it, right?
Well, and that's what, hey, Brooks, what I say is people don't judge play calling. They judge play results, but they think they're judging play calling. And I had this discussion with Doug. Doug would say, you know what? And he was very honest about it. Sometimes the players save my ass and they make something out of nothing. On the other hand, sometimes you dial up the perfect play and the left guard gets beat and nobody knows. You got him. Oh, you got him. But somebody didn't execute. From that perspective, everybody's judging play results, but they don't realize it. They're judging and they think, oh, that's a bad play call.
Well,
might be a great play call.
Yeah. And when those results are bad, I mean, they're going to want to fix them. So what is it that happened, right? So you have a managerial head coach who is responsible for what's out on the field, and his offense that he is putting out there, and having Brian Johnson. He said it several times that he's running my offense. This is kind of what we want to do. And he's calling plays within that confines. Jeffrey Lurie likes Nick Sirianni in his managerial role. So if you're going to change the offense, Brian Johnson gets caught in the middle. He has to be the one that gets removed, and then they have to bring in someone else. Sirianni, whenever he had not, like whenever they announced it, and the first time we talked to him, he was distraught. He looked very sullen on the stage. Like, he's not someone that likes to fire people, and he's caught in a really awkward, I don't know if that's the right word, but a scenario where you have to cut loose a guy. It's a strange scenario where a guy's getting head coaching offers, and you're having to fire in the middle of those. I mean, not offers, interviews.
Yeah.
So like that's how I perceived it, is they Jeffrey Lurie likes his managerial. They had to make changes on the offensive side. And whenever you have that, you have to make some changes that may not be popular. So I covered another managerial head coach, Ed Orgeron at LSU. Never really was a coordinator. He came in, was an excellent defensive line technician. And then when all things come together and you get an offensive coordinator like Joe Brady, well, he was a passing game coordinator at the time, and you have an excellent defensive coordinator, Dave Aranda, who ends up being a head coach of his own, you have to continually be able to hire within those slots. And you also have to manage the culture of the entire organization. So in 2019, when they win the national championship, and then later on, you just see how a whole culture falls apart. So Sirianni is in this situation here where he's got to keep the thing going. So he's made two staff changes, and, you know, they've have great continuity on the roster. They've just, you know, the Athletic, we just did an analysis of the rosters as they stand going into the draft, and the Eagles ranked number 5 in the NFL. Yeah. There's a good roster on there. Sirianni, who's overseeing all of it, has to make sure that that whoever's calling the plays and whatever the offensive system is, that they're maximizing out of that. You've got Hurts, Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, Saquon Barkley, Dallas Goedert. There's no reason why that shouldn't be a top 5 offense. You should not have a 1-6 finish. So all of that falls on him. But Lurie, overall, as I see it, likes to see how an overall culture that they built.
Right.
He places that a lot in Sirianni. So that's – I don't think it was a political save – my skin, and this is a political situation where I'm just making him the fall guy to save my job. I think that Lurie actually values him as a manager. And after going to the Super Bowl in his second year and going to the playoffs 3 straight years, he wants to give him the opportunity to continue what has been largely a success in his tenure. So if you fire him, then you're also sending a message to other coaches who are interviewing, well, how long is my leash going to be? Do I get the chance to fix problems after, you know, 1 year of it going wrong? So I think all of it had a little nuance just specific to how the Eagles run as an organization.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things, Brooks, with Sirianni, that they would know behind closed doors more than us three having this conversation and everybody watching, is what role Sirianni had in the success of the team, getting to a Super Bowl. What did he bring? What quality did he have that they value to say, that's part of the reason why we made it to a Super Bowl and been to three straight? Yeah, we had a little falling off here, but we value the positives more than that little small sample size.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't here at the time, obviously, but, you know, he comes in, and the staff that he builds, he brings Shane Steichen with him, Jonathan Gannon with him, all the ideas and the things that they put together, and the back and forth of building an entire system around players that end up going to the Super Bowl. I mean, they like what he built. They think that he continued to do that. And after they leave, they want to give him a chance to continue that. So tried to do that with Brian Johnson. It worked for a large majority of the season, and then just the bottom fell out in a very confusing finish. So
we're all still trying to figure out what happened.
It's apparent that, like, obviously they've got figured out on offense, but you know, Jeffrey Lurie obviously believes that it's a tweak and not a complete overhaul, that they bring in somebody like Kellen Moore who can infuse a little bit more ideas into an offense to keep it sustainable throughout an entire season. So that's what I think they like about that. I think that's what Lurie likes about Sirianni from what he did before and what he did well in that beginning.
So one thing, you know, on the radio show yesterday we were talking about, which is how does this staff moving forward, we talk about being a sponge and new coordinator, how do they view Jalen Hurts? Do they view him as a guy that they want to be a passer, limit his running, only run when you have to? You know, 2 years ago, he played less games but ran more, had more yards than he had last year. Now, last year there was questions, was he injured and that why he wasn't running as much, or because of the contract? Do they not want him to run? Do they value him as a passer? Where does this franchise, paying this man what they're paying him, how do they view him big picture?
Well, they view him as their franchise quarterback. That's clear. They view him as someone who can is an excellent passer. I think last year when you see how they did run a lot of what they called run pass options, sometimes I think there were reads that just ended up being passes more frequently than runs. You think about how a defense takes things away from an offense. Hurts is an exceptional runner as a quarterback, and I think there are times whenever it just benefited them more to take that away in certain instances. But I think they see him as an all-around quarterback, and if you think about how Moore is going to use him as a quarterback, think of it last year. Justin Herbert, he's not, I wouldn't say a complete rushing quarterback, but he still had over 200 yards and three rushing touchdowns. I think they're going to use that from Jalen Hurts, but you also have to think about what they're building around him. You've got two of the best receivers in the NFL, arguably a top five running back in the NFL. And if they're looking to use some of these zone reads or things like that, how much is Kellen Moore going to use in that? I think they see a top five quarterback in Jalen Hurts, and that gives you a lot of options based on what you have throughout the talent on your team. So that's someone that you can build around. I think it doesn't mean you could make tons of decisions in that way. You could say, all right, well, we want him to rush for 500 plus yards this year. Well, he's thrown for over 3,500 yards every year. They're confident.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
And in him as a passer, you can build around that too. So any of these franchise quarterbacks that a team has is someone that, and again, in sponge mode, you know that you can bring in an offensive coordinator, and they can, whenever they're starting to be creative on the board and say, how do I use this guy, that there's a lot of options. So I'm actually really curious to see how Moore, based on his past years, what he sees in Jalen and what he thinks is his strengths and what he can use and what might, you know, might still be a strength for Jalen, but in Moore's system, the way he views Austin, offenses may not be used as much. I don't think that means that Jalen Hurts, you know, if that thing is less, that means that Jalen's bad at that. I think it's more because of how Moore thinks would be.
And there's a lot of pressure on Kellen Moore because, as you mentioned, there's tremendous talent on this offense, and there's no reason they shouldn't be a top five offense.
Well, that's what I think a lot of, you know, the fans look at and say, you got all this talent. If you had, you know, because there's always these
and you got to keep everybody happy. Well, easy way to do that, though, is to win football games, and then everybody's happy. But we saw last year, Brooks, and this is where, you know, you're the fresh ideas on the beat. Sometimes we all get jaded. Like, I want to talk to you about Howie and Howie's press conference, because I take everything Howie says about the draft with a grain of salt. I want to see the things through your eyes and see if you culled anything from that. But so that part of it I want to get from you. But also with to finish up on Kellen Moore, the fact that he has to keep everybody happy and Saquon's added to the mix, look, nobody was complaining when they were 10-1 last year, but when things came off, not that I think AJ gets a bad rap, because a lot of his angst has to do with the team not performing well, and he just takes being a team captain seriously and is trying to get people on the same page and get people productive. But bottom line is, guys will start complaining about touches if you don't win football games. So it's a good problem, as Nick Sirianni always says, but the word problem still exists in good problem.
Yeah, I mean, I agree in terms of how players operate within a team that's either successful or not successful. I mean, everybody who gets to the NFL, there's something about them individually within their mentality, within their physicality that has gotten to this point. Like, elite athletes are just different humans. And if you end up winning, it solves a lot of problems. But if you lose, everyone who's a competitive person is going to sit there and think, either they're super self-critical about what they did on the field and feel like they should have done something better, or they felt like they didn't get the opportunity to change the game. I mean, it's just the first thing that popped in my head, but think about the Super Bowl when Travis Kelce gets off on the sideline and bumps Andy Reid all angry.
Yeah.
Like, those two have one of the best relationships between players and coaches in the NFL. But like, that when you compare to how the AJ Brown narrative was going around last season, I think that's the manifestation of what people feel whenever they're losing, whenever they're not feeling like they're contributing, whenever it's not going well. So, I mean, there are instances in the past where that's brewed into a problem. And I think that's one of the large reasons why there's criticism and fair criticism about the state of the team going into this year under Sirianni, who's a manager, and part of your manager as a coach is to make sure that there's not a problem with people. And whenever there's, you know, 1-6 finish, everybody's going to be pissed. I remember talking to Jason Kelce in the locker room after the 49ers lost, and he said, one loss isn't a problem. The problem happens whenever there's many in succession and you lose faith in the coaching and in yourself. That's exactly what happened towards the end of the season. So nothing's going to look right. So back to your original thing that you said earlier, I want to touch on it again. Kellen Moore, this is his third offensive coordinator job in the NFL, Cowboys, Chargers, Eagles. Guy who's had head coaching interviews before. This is the best opportunity you could possibly have. I mean, the Chargers, but like, there was some problems with holes on the offense and things like that. There's a lot of pressure on Moore, and anybody looking at this situation, I got a sense of this last year whenever I saw in the entire Link chant run the ball. If you have all these options and it's not working and you've tried too hard on one thing, it's not going to look good for Moore. And if they're not a top five offensive again, you're just going to be looking at it and wondering why. So it's a great opportunity for him, but maybe maybe there's you're damned both ways if it weren't caught. So
well, the off season is always a fun time to break out the lists and the debates. And one of the things I think before last year, you would say Jalen Hurts is he's top five guy. You know, we had a topic the other day. Somebody asked me, would I take Jordan Love over Jalen Hurts? Or would I take, you know, this guy? And you're starting to think, how far has Hurts slid down the list? In other words, hey, if Jordan Love played with A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith and Goddard and this offensive line, would we be having these strange conversations about what the hell happened to the offense? Is it a byproduct of that position, or is that not fair?
I think there's some recency bias always in evaluation of players after every year. The thing that I think gets unnoticed a little bit last year is that Jalen Hurts threw for a career high in both yards and touchdowns.
Yeah.
But conversely, threw 15 picks and lost a bunch of fumbles. So the volatility of the dissonance on offense showed a lot of the confusion that was going on the field, and that's always going to be coming through on the quarterback. So you have some of these elite moments, like the Chiefs game where Jalen Hurts checks to Devontae Smith play that breaks the game open, or coming back against the Bills and has the rushing touchdown to win the game. And then you have throwing a pick against the Seahawks late in the game, looking confused and in the Tampa Bay wild card game, wherever Goddard and I think it was Devontae Smith ran the same route along the sideline. And
the jet interception. Yeah.
So those things, it looks like Hurts isn't a top five quarterback if, you know, like to answer the premise of your question. But, like, I think that shows an overall issue with how the offense is functioning and not so much with the quarterback because, you know, as we're talking about the kind of quarterback Jalen Hurts is a sponge type guy. He's going to reflect a bit of what the offense, and if it's not, if it doesn't have fluidity and sensible fluidity, it's going to show that on the field. And I think even with the problems that it had systemically, 3,800 yards, 23 touchdowns, 15 picks, that's in with all the problems that they had on the back end of the year. You had two receivers making 1,000 yards. That's pretty good for a team that everybody felt like, you know, coaches should be.
Number eight offense in the NFL, tremendous third down offense, tremendous fourth down offense, top 10 red zone offense.
So I'll say, like, if Kellen Moore gets the most out of this offense, this is the moment where Hurts would make it clear that he's worth $255 million. I mean, there's no one on the team, and in the coaching, and we heard Jeffrey Lurie say it himself, that feels like Jalen Hurts isn't an amazing quarterback.
Well, let's ask the question like this. Okay, yeah. So and I thought the Eagles were in a really tough spot. Okay, the year before, he's an average quarterback, kind of middle to the back end of the pack. They make the playoffs. They bring up, you know, he's the starter next year after all the talk, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson. Nope, he's the guy. He takes him to the Super Bowl. He's so good that they have to pay him. They have to decide, are we paying you on this one great year or the year before? You're not getting somewhere in the middle. That's not the way this works. But what if we had all 3 years to evaluate? What kind of deal is he getting?
Well, I think you have to look at it in terms of how the Eagles operate. We heard Roseman talk about it the other day. It's been a topic of such that I've written about the last couple of weeks in terms of free agency, like Devontae Smith getting his extension. They didn't even pick up his fifth-year option yet. They did it like, all right, we're going to add the fifth, and then we're going to add 3 years.
Which, by the way, is an amazing contract. He doesn't get $25 million, Brooks, till 2026. And by that point, Jefferson signed, Chase signed, Ayuk signed, Lamb signed, and that's going to look cheap as hell in 2026.
When Jalen Hurts got his contract, he was temporarily the highest-paid
quarterback. For about 10 seconds, I think.
And then everybody else went after that. So that's how the Eagles operate. You say, okay, we need a quarterback. That's the number one position in all the NFL. And taking the sample size the last couple of years, we know that we need this position. And the way that we operate is that we get ahead on this. And if we decide that we like the guy, then we're going to give him a contract to the market of that present time and lock him up for a long period of time. They did that. And there's still, you see other teams that are stuck in high-paced situations.
Look at Denver and Minnesota this year. They have pigeonholed themselves. Yeah, Deshaun Watson, you know, from being down with the Texans. Yeah, people pigeonhole themselves into making these drastic decisions at quarterback. I think the Eagles are fine there, but yeah, I don't
have a problem with the contract for Jalen Hurts because
he is good enough
to get you and win a Super Bowl. Like
I maintain it's team friendly. That's what the Eagles do. That's been one of the successes. At B Cabina, though, I want to get we only got a few minutes left with you. Athletic.com does a tremendous job. I mentioned those fresh ideas. I need your fresh ideas from Howie's press conference because of the draft. We're a week away, and we got in that wormhole, which was great discussion. But I want to get your thoughts on the draft at 22 overall.
Yeah.
Very unlikely Howie stays there. That's been his history. Might go up, the targeted trade up. But you know the debates. You need a right guard potentially. But you probably want a right guard you can kick out to tackle whenever Lane decides to walk away versus maybe cornerback or anybody else. Where's Brooks Cabina got the Eagles going?
I'll go to what he said the other day, which I thought was kind of funny. He just said, I like the trades. The last 3 years, he's had, I think, 13 draft day trades in the last 3 years. So to think that they won't move in the first round is kind of unlikely to me. But there's another scenario that, okay, so you have all these quarterbacks and receivers who are going to clog the top 10, and it's going to push out all these offensive tackles into the mid rounds. My argument is if you feel like there's value in getting one of these elite offensive tackles that might have gone top 10 in any other given year, it might be worth packaging one of your second round picks to move up and select one of them.
Because
if you stay at 22, you're probably going to get one of the six or seven. And I've seen everyone across the beat and reputable people across the nation. Like it kind of fluctuates between Amarius Mims from Georgia or Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. And if you're sitting in that situation, you're not getting much flexibility at playing a guard.
No.
Mims never played it. He's 6'8". Not a great frame to put in the inside.
He's got very little experience, period.
Even at tackle, you have questions whether he can plug and play. I think everybody brings up the Stoutland University thing and think that's just going to wash everything. Oh, you can apply that to any offensive lineman they pick. He's going to get the most out of them as a developmental guy. So you could use that argument for anybody.
Yeah.
So, but listening to what Howie said the other day, and I've only covered two general managers, Nick Caserio with the Texans and now Howie Roseman.
It was very good. You've had two very good general managers.
They both have holistic processes. They know what they're doing, obviously. And I think whenever you listen to them talk before draft day, no general manager is going to give away what they're doing, but they both give you a sense of what they value and how they operate within their process. I think one of the best answers, and I wrote about it immediately after, is how we talked to Jimmy Kimski, asked him about offensive tackle, basically, with Lane Johnson and whether he retires. Do you draft a guy? Does he wait? I thought Howie's answer was really interesting because he talked about the value of the whole team and being able to use some of the veterans like Jason Kelsey and Fletcher Cox and others to show them how to play. And you can use that within drafting a guy, and they're very much we're going to pick the best player, not force a position. So like describing his process, that you could say, all right, well, he said that in answer to offensive tackle. That means that they're fine with taking Amarius Mims. Well, you could also use that same theory, that same idea for a bevy of other picks. If they pick a wide receiver, you've got AJ Brown and Devontae Smith, two guys playing on extensions. You could use that at, cornerback. You have Darius Slay, who's an all pro that people can learn from. I think that can be involved with whatever they decide to do with number 22 overall. Whenever you sit there and listen to a general manager before the draft, none of what they talk about in a specific player matters. What matters is what they say about their process that will eventually explain how they're thinking about what they'll do with those picks. So whatever they decide to do, whether it's trade up to get some of these offensive linemen, whether it's to trade back because they feel like there's more value in acquiring more picks for the later because they feel like the middle of the pack, I don't, just a different evaluation piece is better there. I think It'll explain their philosophy. But back to like what I've kind of looked at in terms of 22, just go back to the offensive lineman thing. The question here is, what do they value more? Do they value more the pick that it would require to move up to pick a guy that has more flexibility interior and outside? You probably have to move up as far as 16. Is that value higher than what they'd value in picking an offensive tackle at 22, like Mims, who eventually have to be developed and play?
Right.
We don't know what those values are on their chart. So, like, there could be no trades between the middle teens. Because, Dane Brugler, one of our draft analysts at The Athletic, supremely good at his job.
Tremendous. The Beast. We'll give it a plug.
Looked at
best draft guy in the business.
His 7-round mock draft came out, and he only had four trades in the first round, and none of them had to do with positions other than quarterback and wide receiver. I think that there's also a debate, because it takes two to telephone, how we may want to move up. But maybe a lot of teams will sit there and say, you know what, on my big board, all these offensive tackles are freaking good.
Yeah.
So, like, if I miss out on this guy, I'll just take the next guy. I'll be fine with whoever falls to me. And the Eagles may be sitting there and they're like, ah, crap, well, we just get the fifth guy.
Yeah. I always point out it takes two to tango. I mean, just because you want to trade up or trade down doesn't mean you can at all times. But Howie's been very good at it.
Well, let's just hope the guy on the other line isn't Kevin Costner. What was his name in that movie?
I don't know, but the Jacksonville GM was the loser. I do remember that. So
I want my picks back. All of them.
Not Trent Baalke, but I forget his name. But that draft day, that Jacksonville draft day GM, man, guys, watch that movie. He does a bad job. Bad job, bro.
Never seen it. One of my friends in the business, Nick Underhill, covers the Saints. Every year he tweets out around this time, like him watching the movie, and it's like, this is so terrible.
It is.
I've yet to see it. And
you
I
get to look at Jennifer Gardner at Radio Row, a Super Bowl in New York. MetLife Stadium. Jennifer Gardner on Radio Row.
She was in the elevator with us. Were you in the elevator with us, John, when she was in
there? I was not. I did get, I was in the media center, and Mr. Costner had to use the bathroom. They had a very small bathroom.
Sonny Weaver, by the way, was his name.
Sonny Weaver was the bad
junior.
GM.
Junior.
And there's like these big burly security guards, Brooks, blocking the entrance to the bathroom. Mr. Costner is in the bathroom.
Yes,
I got that.
I remember that.
Yeah.
All right.
You can't share the same stall.
Brooks Kubina from The Athletic, their coverage outstanding, getting you ready for the draft. Read his article about Jalen Hurts sponging it all in as he's getting ready for an offseason for his third offensive coordinator in Philadelphia, and that all starts now as the draft 1 week from today. Brooks, it's good to see you, man.
Likewise, guys.
Thanks, bud.
All right, Brooks Kubina here on Birds 365, and we'll wrap it all up coming up next.
Connection is a healthy and essential aspect of our daily lives. From a warm hug after a hard day to kind words just when we need them. These gentle moments give us an understanding of life's true meaning. But when the ability to connect is interrupted by the hustle of daily life and to-do lists pile up next to the worry of who needs school supplies, sometimes making decisions about our health and the well-being of our loved ones can take a back seat. When it comes to those we care for, vaccines are one of the greatest public health success stories, and along with other measures, are one way to help prevent certain diseases. At Merck, we envision communities where families, healthcare providers, local organizations, and advocates work together. Health equity happens when every person, regardless of age and ethnicity, in every community, has fair access to healthcare, including the vaccines they need. For more information, please visit yvaccines.com.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.